All right, welcome in, everybody. It's First and Ten, the podcast. I'm Matt Hayes on the Saturday Down South Network. We're coming at you with 45 minutes of fantastic SEC football. Got a great show lined up today. We're going to speak with all-SEC tight end Hayden Hurst of South Carolina. A terrific player, a fantastic backstory. Wait till you hear this story, and wait till you hear him tell it. A dual sport star in high school out of legendary Bulls school in Jacksonville, Florida. Baseball and football. Could throw a baseball in the low 90s. Drafted in the 17th round by the Pirates. And was literally Nuke LaLoosh. Without Susan Sarandon, you know, following him around from city to city. Couldn't find the plate. Could throw the hell out of it. Couldn't find a plate. Finally decided, you know what, I'm going to go play football. And now he's a star. Now he's a projected first-round draft pick in next year's NFL draft. Just a terrific story. You're going to love hearing him talking about it and how where he came from and now where he is now and what he thinks about this season with South Carolina. And now South Carolina's, they're jazzed about this season. And I know every team is jazzed about the season and everybody thinks they can go 12-0. South Carolina is going to surprise some people. All right, before we do that, we got to do a little house cleaning here. Let's talk about TicketCity.com, our fantastic sponsor. Ball is here, everyone. You're going to spend money. You're going to invest time in a weekend to go see a game. Why not get the best possible ticket you can get? And we've been working with Ticket City for a long time. They are the experts in college football, having served over 1.5 million customers. They have been the place to go for SEC Dukes for almost three decades. And now they're offering $20 off to all Saturday Down South podcast listeners. All you got to do is go to TicketCity.com, enter the discount code SDS20, that's Sally, Delta Sally, 20, when you check out to save $20. So go to TicketCity.com, that's TicketCity, all one word, .com, and get your SEC tickets today. All right, we're here with Hayden Hurst, star South Carolina tight end, preseason all-SEC selection. Hayden, you got to South Carolina by way of professional baseball. And you know what? I actually lived in Jacksonville for about 11 years, and I know all about the Bulls school and the history of that baseball program. So if you start at the Bulls school, you got picked in the 17th round by the Pirates, you must have been something on the mound. What happened there? How did it not all play out for you?
You know, in high school, people always kind of told me I was a football player playing baseball. You know, I just kind of threw really hard, and, you know, things kind of fell into place, and I got picked by Pittsburgh. But some things kind of happened when I was with them. Just mentally, just couldn't really put it all together. It was just a lot for an 18-year-old kid to try to figure out. Had some control issues and kind of just fell out of love with the game and found myself at South Carolina.
So you're in minor league baseball, and years ago, when I was working at the Jacksonville newspaper, Hayden, I went on a minor league baseball trip to kind of chronicle what it was like for those guys to go on those trips and the buses and everything. And the one thing that stuck out with me was those guys used to buy the blow-up little rafts that you put in your pool, and they'd stick them horizontally between the seats in the bus, and that's how they would sleep. And I think people don't understand the life of a minor league baseball player. What's that like?
You know, it's definitely different. I mean, you hear professional baseball, you know, you think guys are automatically in the MLB, but that's not really how it works. You know, you got to kind of earn your stripes and go through the ranks of minor league baseball, which isn't exactly the most lavish lifestyle. Luckily, I was just down in the GCL, so my bus trips weren't the 10 to 12-hour ones that some of the guys have to deal with. But I think the furthest one that I was on was about 3 hours. But, you know, you're up at 7 a.m., and it's a full day. You go from 7 a.m. to probably about 5 p.m. down in the GCL, and it's 100 degrees, and it's the same thing every single day. So it's a little tough, and it wears on you, that's for sure.
So at what point did you think, okay, this isn't the glamorous thing that I thought it was going to be?
That was probably after my second year of instructional ball, which is in the fall. You know, I'm sure I'm like every kid. When I signed, it was going to be 1 to 2 years, and I was going to be pitching in the big leagues. But, you know, it didn't really pan out that way, not even really close. You know, just like I said, some things kind of happened, and it just didn't work out. But found myself with South Carolina. I couldn't be happier.
So you those couple years that you spent in baseball, what did you mm-hmm. learn, like, as far as being a man from the entire experience?
It humbled me for sure, you know, because coming out of high school, I was All-American, everything, you know, thought of myself pretty highly, you know, and it kind of knocked me down a few pegs, you know. I pretty much was at the bottom of everything, and you know, I couldn't even hardly play catch on a foul line, let alone pitch in a game. So, I mean, out of everything, it was pretty awful for 3 years, but it definitely humbled me, and it makes me more appreciative of everything that I've accomplished to this day.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I was talking to Will about you, and he said, you know, the way Hayden plays, he plays like the next play is the last play he's ever going to play again. Did you learn that from that experience, you think?
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, I didn't even pitch in a game for probably a year and a half. Just, like I said, just mentally couldn't put it all together, and it humbled me, because, I mean, I was at the bottom of the bottom. You know, I just couldn't figure it out, and, you know, it was tough, but it taught me how to work hard. I mean, like I said, it humbled me, and to this day, I mean, I'm never going to have anything taken from me again, and that's how I play every single play.
How much of a release was it to finally, like, play another sport, you know, to get that off your shoulders?
It was huge. I mean, since the day I started kind of struggling with baseball, football was always in the back of my mind. You know, I would go to the park and couldn't play catch with my partner on the foul line, and I would just be like, man, I could be playing football and having success. This isn't fun anymore. So making that phone call and telling the Pirates that I was done was probably the most relieving thing I've ever done in my life. I mean, it took just a weight was lifted off my shoulders.
So what was that phone call like? I mean, were they upset, or did they understand it? Or
They weren't so much upset. You know, I mean, I feel like they understood my struggles to an extent. It was kind of a short phone call, but, you know, the guy that I had talked to kind of left me with some words that have stuck with me to this day. You know, it just gives me more motivation.
What were those words he left you with?
He was in the Dominican Republic, and he made a FaceTime call to me, and I was kind of explaining things to him. He had been updated, you know, through the whole process of my struggles and stuff, and me just kind of trying to figure things out. But he told me he hoped that I could stick with something in my life, and I kind of replay that over and over in my head. I don't know if he necessarily meant it at the time, but, you know, it stuck with the 19-year-old kid, you know, and I have not forgotten it to this day.
I mean, that's not exactly the most pleasant thing to say to a 19-year-old kid, you know?
Yeah. Like I said, it stuck with me to this day, and it's just motivation now. You know, like I said, I'm never going to have anyone tell me I can't do anything. I'm never going to have anything taken away from me again.
So you get to South Carolina and you start playing tight end. And tight end, Hayden, I'm sure you'll agree with this, is kind of a lost art in college football now. I mean, there's everybody spreading the ball out. They're trying to find mismatches. And the tight end is kind of gone by the way. What was that like when, you know, you were like, all right, I'm going to play tight end now?
You know, it was difficult because I'd been out of football for 5 years. You know, I hadn't played since my junior year of high school. And, I mean, it's a lot. I mean, you got to learn blocking schemes. You have to, you know, learn protections. And then on top of all that, you got to learn pass routes. So, I mean, it's still something to this day that I'm trying to figure out, you know. But it's just something I got to work at.
Do you enjoy the position? You enjoy the nuances of it?
Oh, I absolutely love it. I mean, it's just, it keeps you on your toes, you know, because there's always something that the offensive coordinator needs you to do or needs you to pick up. So, I mean, I love it.
So, earlier this spring, Gronk signed a record deal for a tight end in the NFL. He's going to make $10.7 million a year. That's a lot of money to play tight end, huh?
That's a lot of money to play tight end.
That's a lot of money to play any position. But,
yeah,
I mean, that's – if you think about that, though, tight end clearly is a position the NFL values. And right now, it's not that you're just an all-SEC, preseason all-SEC selection. You got a lot of scouts that are talking about you have the potential to be the first-round pick. I mean, is that exciting, or does it continue to motivate you to push you harder?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just hearing stuff like that, like I said, it's just extremely humbling because when I stepped foot on campus 3 years ago, I knew I would have success. But to be considered a first-round pick potentially in the next few months, I mean, that's that's just crazy. It's hard for me to wrap my head around, but like I said, it's more motivation for me to work hard and go prove people right.
So, Hayden, I was talking with Jake Bentley earlier this spring, and he said, you know, he's true freshman quarterback, skipped his high school senior season. You know, he's getting thrown into the grinder. He's talking about getting hit the first time against Tennessee and how it was just an unbelievable feeling that he couldn't even imagine how much it hurt. You know, and I asked him, I said, so Jake, at what point did you figure out, okay, here's what I got to do? He said, probably around early in the Tennessee game, I started to think, all right, if all else fails, find Hayden. He said, I'm going to get him the ball and he'll catch it. So have you guys developed kind of a nice rapport?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, off the field, me and Jake hang out all the time. We play Xbox together and we just kind of joke and laugh about stuff. I mean, he's an awesome guy. He's one of my best friends at South Carolina. And I feel like that's just kind of translated to on the field now. Because, I mean, I tell him anytime he gets in trouble, just look my way and throw it up and I promise I'll bail you out. I think I tell him that at least every single time that our offense takes the field. I think he's starting to believe me now.
Hey, he's an intense dude, man. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I got from. I can't imagine like the Xbox games. What are those things like?
Oh my gosh, we've gotten to the point where we've had to like mute each other on our party chats because it gets so heated. We won't talk to each other for a few hours after. I mean, we're literally the same type of person. We're so competitive, and even a game of NHL will put our friendship on pause for about an hour.
He was telling me how he would not only get in fights with his brothers playing football, but he'd get in fights with his dad, too. Like, he is one motivated, intense dude, huh?
Anything he does, he wants to win. And if he doesn't do it, it bothers him. You know, that's why he's become such a huge leader on our team. I mean, he wants to do everything full speed, and he wants to win. So, I mean, it's easy to get behind a guy like that.
Do you guys see a guy like that, a young guy that's got – clearly he has a lot of potential. He can make every throw – you know, he's the prototype quarterback. He's a guy that I think all you guys like. Do you see that, and does that give you guys more confidence, you know, as this season begins? Because, I mean, this is a team, I think a lot of people are kind of saying, well, we'll see about South Carolina.
Right. You know, he's gotten a lot of hype going into the season. I mean, I think it's well-deserved. I mean, he's studying up on film. He's watching teams. I mean, he is one of the most hardworking individuals on our team that I've ever seen. I mean, he wants to be better. He wants to win, and whatever it takes. And he knows that. I mean, he's at the helm, and it's our offense is under his control. You know, we're going to go as far as Jake wants to take us. And I mean, I think we're in a good spot with him at starting quarterback.
Now Will was talking about how he's seen a change in the last 4 or 5 months with you guys. How everybody's starting to get it. Everybody's starting to buy in. The investment is there. Do you see that with your teammates? Do you see, like, you know, this team could be a lot more than people think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, camp was huge for us because, I mean, Coach Muschamp's rules, we hang out all the time. We don't leave the stadium. And I think that was just huge, building camaraderie within the team, you know. And I think that's starting to kind of translate to on the field. I mean, we see the potential, and we know everyone's kind of counting us out, you know. But I love that. And I think our team is kind of taken to that too, and it's just going to add motivation to everybody.
So I always tell people ask me, what's Will Muschamp like? And I always say, you know, here's how I know if a guy is a good dude. If I have a day off, I'll spend a day with him. And I think Will's like that. What's he like to play for?
As a coach, and as far as like on the field, he's an intense guy. I mean, I love playing for Coach. I would do anything for him. He's completely changed my life since I've been at South Carolina and since he's gotten here. He's very demanding, but, I mean, it's fun to play for a guy like that. You know, you never want to come to the sideline and disappoint Coach because, you know, he would do anything for you. But I think the biggest thing with Coach is off the field, he's a person. You know, he can separate that Coach Muschamp, and then he can be, you know, one of the guys off the field and joke around and have fun. You know, I think that's the most important thing with Coach.
Now, Hayden, clearly Will is big on 1-0. It's the first game, this game, the only game you're thinking about, and clearly you are thinking about NC State. But is there a game on the roster where you're thinking, you know, this is a chance for us to show who and what we are?
You know, I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than ESPN primetime, you know, on Saturday. I think that'll be huge for us in our program to prove what Coach Muschamp has instilled in this program and where he wants to take things. I think that'll be huge, you know, September 2nd at 3 o'clock when we kick that off.
That's fantastic. Hayden, I really appreciate it, man. Good luck, all right?
Sure.
Take care.
Thank you so much.
All right. What a terrific player he is. That's a guy, people, that I think when it's all said and done this season, he goes to the combine, he runs, they interview him. He's a guy that's not only going to be a first-round pick, he's going to be the first tight end taken. Just an extremely talented guy. You can tell just by him talking, he gets it. He totally understands it. He's got that motivation behind him. I mean, what a story. What a fantastic story, South Carolina. He's getting the elite SEC-type players. They're starting to get better on the lines of scrimmage. He's got a fantastic quarterback, a guy who at the end of the day will be not only the most talented quarterback in the SEC, but I've talked to numerous NFL scouts already, and the kid played half a season last year, and they're in love with him. Big, strong kid, can make every throw, Jake Bentley. I mean, the sky is the limit right now for South Carolina. To me, that's a very underrated team. I think they're playing with a little chip on their shoulder, and the East is wide open, absolutely wide open. Jake Bentley in South Carolina. This allows us to pivot to the news of the week in the SEC, at least in the East Division, and that's what's going on in Florida. Not only the suspension of two more players, so there'll be a total of 9 now that will not play against Michigan, including the two best offensive players in that team, really. Wide receiver Antonio Callaway, tailback Jordan Scarlett, the two guys that make that offense go. Florida will be without them. And just announced today by Jim McElwain, Florida will also, oh, by the way, be starting a brand new quarterback in that game, a guy who has not taken a snap yet in college football, and that's redshirt freshman Felipe Franks. And what a great little segue into this Felipe Franks story I'm about to tell you. One that kind of explains the quarterback situation at Florida and its problems since Tim Tebow graduated and what happened last year with Will Grier. Will Grier, who essentially is really the only quarterback worth anything that Florida has recruited since Tebow left after the 2009 season. I mean, think about what Florida's had at quarterback. John Brantley, Jordan Reed, Trey Burton, Jeff Driskel, Jacoby Brissett, Tyler Murphy, Skylar Morningweg, Treon Harris, Austin Appleby, Luke Del Rio, and Grier. And that's not a murderer's row there, people. You're not scaring too many people in the best conference in college football that plays the best defense in college football. You're not scoring points there, right? No wonder that Florida's offense, passing offense, was no better than mid-80s that entire time. But there was hope there with Grier. 2 years ago when they started out 6-0 and they had that big win against Tennessee at home on that fourth and forever throw, and then they just absolutely demolished Ole Miss, and it looked like the Gators had themselves a quarterback of the future in Will Grier until Grier messed up and took a supplement he shouldn't have taken and was suspended for a year by the NCAA. But there's a little backstory to that. So last fall, I went out to West Virginia to speak to Will Grier and get his side of the story. And Will told me when the season ended at Florida, he wanted to meet with Jim McElwain and find out what the situation was. Was he still welcome back? Was he part of the team? McElwain initially said that Grier was searching for guarantees. Grier completely denies that. McElwain kind of backed off it later when I talked to him about it. The reality is, McElwain really didn't want him there, and Grier moved on. Grier left for West Virginia. He's going to play for Danner Holgorsen this year in that wide-open offense. He's going to throw for about 4,000 yards and 35 or 40 touchdowns. And every single time he throws a ball in the end zone, and every single time Florida or West Virginia scores, you know there's going to be Florida fans thinking, what in the world happened? So here's what happened. Grier wanted to return. When I was speaking to him last year in West Virginia for a story I did at Bleacher Report, he was emotional about it. There were tears in his eyes when he was talking about it. He talked about how he not only loved Florida, he loved the community, he loved the city. He wanted to win a national championship there. He talked about how he still couldn't sleep at night sometimes thinking about how it went wrong. He felt like McElwain pushed him out. For whatever reason, McIlwain had a choice. And his choice was A, Luke Del Rio, and the guy he was recruiting, Felipe Franks. And ironically enough, everyone, ironically enough, Greer swears that before that meeting, when he met with McIlwain to figure out what was going on and where his future was, he says McIlwain was 2 hours late because he was recruiting Felipe Franks. And that's why Greer and his dad had to sit in the office and wait for McIlwain to come back. So it's kind of interesting how it all comes full circle now. Florida's got a brand new starting quarterback getting on the field against Michigan. Season opener. He's never thrown a pass in his career. Going against that Michigan defense. It's going to be very, very interesting. Meanwhile, there's Greer. He'll be on the field against Virginia Tech. It's going to be interesting to watch it play out and watch what happens with the quarterback position at Florida. Because, I mean, let's look at this realistically. This is Jim McElwain's third year at Florida. He should have a quarterback right now that he has developed and has ready to go. So, Felipe Franks, whether you agree with it or not, the decision to recruit him, the decision to play him, Felipe Franks is now tied to Jim McElwain. This is his guy, his recruit, his development. Now you have to see how will he play. And this is what is going to show a lot of Florida fans as far as strictly offense, scoring, quarterback production, quarterback development, how far they've come under McIlwain. Brief about how they've won games at Florida. The reality is they've won the East 2 years in a row. They've been in the SEC championship game 2 years in a row. They've gotten blown out both years. And, you know, McIlwain's response is, look, I was brought here to get us back to Atlanta, and that's exactly what I did. And he's exactly right there. But it's not close to where that program should be. A program of that caliber, of that financial backing, and the recruiting footprint that they're in, they've got to be much better than where they are right now. And this is now year three for McIlwain. And year three begins with 9 players suspended for defrauding the university for money. 9 players. You can't blame it on the previous guy because, quite frankly, the previous guy, Will Muschamp, spent 4 years fixing that locker room from the previous guy, Urban Meyer, who left it an absolute wreck. So at some point, you got to say, okay, these are Jim McElwain's guys. These are his players. This is his quarterback. Let's get out there and see what happens. And I know they're going to be short, and I know they're missing their best wide receiver and their best tailback and their 2 best offensive guys. But you know what? You got to go out there and play. It's time for those guys to go play. And it's time for everyone to see what McIlwain has made of as far as a guy who can develop a quarterback. This is his guy, Felipe Franks. All right? This is not a guy that's transferred in like Luke Del Rio or another transfer like Malik Zaire. And I'm sure both those guys could play as well. This guy, Felipe Franks, this quarterback, is going to tell you a lot about where Florida is right now as far as the development of a program and the development of Jim McIlwain as a guy who can not only pick a quarterback, recruit a quarterback, but get him ready to play in any game, in any situation. Jim McIlwain, the coach, who's one of 3 coaches, relatively new, I should say, 3 relatively new coaches in the SEC, where the spotlight is shining very bright. You got McIlwain of Florida. You got Kirby Smart at Georgia. You got Ed Orgeron at LSU. Those are 3 big-time programs. And for all so many years, the SEC has had the elite coaches in college football. Elite coaches, elite recruiters, elite developers. That's why the SEC was on top of the hill as far as the best conference in college football. Clearly, it's players. Clearly, the best area to recruit players is in the Southeast. But you got to have guys who can go get those players, number one. You got to have guys who can develop those players, number two. And for so long, that's what the SEC had. Now you're looking at 3 major programs in the SEC. And whether you like it or not, there are questions there. There's questions with McIlwain. There's questions with Kirby Smart. He's only 1 year into it. And believe me, I'm a guy who thinks Kirby will get that play straightened out. Kirby will get dudes there. He will get players to Georgia, and they will figure it out. But that first year wasn't good. Wasn't pretty, I'll tell you that. A whole lot of ugly in that first year at Georgia. And then there's Ed Orgeron at LSU. The last time we saw Ed as a head coach was at Ole Miss, and it completely imploded. And again, I'm a guy who thinks that was a good hire. I like that hire. I like a guy who will absolutely do everything he can to put the university he loves first. And Ed Orgeron loves LSU, grew up loving LSU. Everything that he did when he was a kid, when he played, was with an eye at LSU. I think that's a great hire. But you're still in a situation where it's prove it time. You got to recruit, you got to develop, you got to win games. And you got to win games that matter. And if you're Kirby Smart and you lose to Georgia Tech, it's not a good look. If you're Florida and you can't even score touchdowns against Florida State, I don't care if you win the East every year. Not a good look. And Ed Orgeron will find that out very quick. And it's going to be interesting to see how the SEC evolves with the new coaches. It'll be interesting to see what happens at Ole Miss if Matt Luke is not the guy and Ole Miss turns somewhere else for a coach. If Ole Miss goes out and hires a new coach, in the previous 3 years, it'll have been Florida, Georgia, LSU, South Carolina, and Ole Miss with new coaches. Those are three pretty good programs, I'll tell you that right now. South Carolina, I think, is just a vastly underrated program. And the right guy in the right situation can win big there. Spurrier proved it with three straight 11-win seasons. I think Will Muschamp's going to do really well there. Those are five significant programs in the SEC. And you're in five prove-it situations with either a new coach or a relatively new coach. And this is going to be how the SEC either maintains its status as the nation's elite, and I'm one who believes that the ACC was the best conference in the college football last year. But clearly, the SEC is right there. So this will be the difference whether the SEC maintains that elite status or kind of slips a little bit. Maybe not only behind the ACC, but maybe even behind the Big Ten. And you look at the Big Ten and the coaches that are now in the Big Ten, the guys that can recruit and have proven they can develop. I think P.J. Fleck was a fantastic hire at Minnesota. I mean, look what James Franklin has done at Penn State. Of course, you got Herb at Ohio State, Harbaugh at Michigan. It just goes on and on right now with the Big Ten. Paul Chryst has done an unbelievable job at Wisconsin. Some good, really good coaches there in the Big Ten. Some really good coaches in the ACC. And in the SEC, you got guys that are kind of in prove-it mode right now. It's going to be a fascinating first month of the season to see what happens at Florida and what happens at Georgia. When Georgia goes to South Bend in week two, big game. Big prove-it game for Georgia. Or LSU with that Orgeron's first big game. See what happens there. Atlanta, brand new stadium, fancy digs, and the Death Star is playing Florida State. And all you got to do is look at Alabama under Nick Saban in these neutral site season opener games, be it in Atlanta, be it in Dallas, and you realize it's amazing what this game does for that program. And Nick Saban talks a lot about how these type games keep his program, keep his players, not just the players, but and this is one thing that, you know, everybody talks about the process with Nick. It's so much more than just that simple little word. Every single person that place is on the same page. Everyone thinks the same way. From the guy who's picking up the laundry in the locker room to the head coach, everybody thinks the same way. All right? So Nick decides he wants to play these neutral site season opening games because that keeps everybody on edge for 9 months. Not 2 weeks in spring, not 4 weeks in fall camp, but for 9 months, since the day the season ends to the day it begins 9 months later, everyone is on edge because everyone realizes you're not playing Akron. No offense to Akron and my pal Terry Bowden. You're not playing Akron week one, okay? So that's why these games for Alabama, these wins over Clemson, Virginia Tech twice, West Virginia, Wisconsin, Michigan, Southern Cal, have come by a combined, are you ready for this, people? 264 to 104. That's a plus 160 in seven games. That's insanity. That's an average margin of victory of 22.8 points per game in a game where you're on a neutral field and you're playing a pretty damn good opponent. Sometimes a really good opponent. Alabama's never scored less than 33 points in those seven games. Are you kidding me? New quarterbacks, new offensive coordinators, new receivers, new tailbacks. Who cares? That's what the process is about, people. It's from day one after the end of the season to day one, 9 months later, the beginning of the season. Everybody's on edge. Everybody realizes it's important to stay focused because you got Clemson in week one. Because you got West Virginia in week one. Because, well, here comes USC. Talented USC in week one. And what do? You go hang 110 points on them, okay? That's what's impressive about what Alabama's done under Nick Saban. To me, as impressive as the championships. He keeps those guys in that entire football factory there on edge for 9 months and ready to go. They run out of the gate week one, play one. They are ready to go. 22.8 points per game margin of victory. 22. That's three touchdowns. Unbelievably impressive. So now here's Florida State. A top five preseason team that I think everyone thinks got a good chance to get into the college football playoff. Got a really good quarterback in DeAndre Francois. Got some good young skill players around him. Defensively, they're fantastic. They are an SEC defense as good as any SEC defense right now. And I think as good as Alabama's defense as well. Here's the problem with Florida State. They could not protect DeAndre Francois last year. That kid got killed week after week after week. So until Florida State can prove to me that they can protect, that they can keep DeAndre Francois off his backside for a majority of the game, I'm not buying it. There's no way they're beating Alabama. Unless they can protect DeAndre Francois. It's all about the quarterback, and it's all about protecting the quarterback. And oh, by the way, the guy on the other sideline, you don't think he's heard about that championship game, how he quote-unquote struggled in the championship game? We're talking about Jalen Hurts now. You don't think he's heard about that for 9 months? You don't think he's heard about how he's going to get beaten out for the job by the hotshot freshman? You think he's going to be ready to play? Yeah, I think Jalen Hurts is going to be ready to play, people. Before Florida lost 10 guys to suspension for this week, I love that game. Florida in five in that game with Michigan replacing, what, 17 starters? I love that game. That line was just like begging you to take that. Now, not so much. Yeah, now I'm going to lay the five. Again, this is just strictly for entertainment purposes. I'm not a gambler. I'm not telling you to gamble. I'm just telling you, in a dream world, that's what I would do. To me, another really intriguing game is Tennessee and Georgia Tech. If only because, I mean, has a guy taken more grief about his team, about the way he coaches, about his silly colloquialisms, champions of life, than Butch Jones? I mean, Tennessee's won back-to-back nine-win seasons, excuse me. Does everybody remember where Tennessee was before Butch arrived? I think that's part of the problem right now at Tennessee. I think Tennessee thinks, well, why can't it be like Peyton Manning and T. Martin. Well, it can't be like that because you haven't had continuity in your program in a decade. And now you have a guy who's kind of given you a little continuity. Won 9 games last year, won 9 games this year, won 9 the year before, beat Florida last year, which he hadn't done in 11 years. Yeah, he lost to Vandy. He was ugly. Lost to South Carolina. Basically lost the East Division when it was right in their hands. Yes, absolutely. It's a growth process, man. But here's the problem right now for Tennessee. They're in a neutral site game, and they're playing Georgia Tech. A Georgia Tech team that's feeling pretty good about itself after the way it finished last year. A Georgia Tech team with that flexbone offense, triple option offense, that absolutely can humiliate other teams if they can't figure it out on defense. You got a lot of new guys in that defensive side of the ball at Tennessee. And if Georgia Tech shortens that game, starts scoring points, Tennessee with that inexperience at quarterback, you can't give up series after series after series because you're trying to break in a quarterback. You got to score because Georgia Tech will shorten the game. They'll take time off the clock. They'll just run, run, run. Cut block, cut block, cut block. That is a dangerous game for the Vols. And Tennessee loses that game. You think people are not happy with Butch now? They lose to Georgia Tech in the season opener before they even reach the SEC schedule? Good God Almighty. I can't even imagine the noise at that point. A&M travels to just absolutely gorgeous Pasadena to play UCLA. In a game where both coaches, Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M, Jim Moore at UCLA, clearly feeling pressure to win, and to win right now. It's a tough spot for Texas A&M. We still don't know who the quarterback is. I got a feeling it's going to be Jake Ubenick. I mean, it's just, to me, that's just, you have to go there. There's no other option. You're on the road. You need to be smart with what you're doing. Yeah, you got to go with the safe guy at that point. You just have to. And that's going to be the problem. Because Texas A&M is going to need to score in that game. Why, you ask? Because Josh Rosen is in the best shape of his career. The kid who had a fantastic freshman season, hurt his shoulder last year, almost midway through the season, missed the rest of the year. He's playing for NFL money right now. He's playing for the number one overall spot right now. And Josh Rosen's going to have a huge game. Texas A&M had problems in coverage last year. Their ability to get after the quarterback is not going to be any better this year. In fact, it'll probably be a little less. So now what do? Now you got a guy who can make throws everywhere on the field. You got a guy who can anticipate throws. You got a guy who can hit small windows. And you have a quarterback on your offense who, you know, are you going to score points? If this gets into a situation where they're trading touchdowns or where Texas A&M has to respond to UCLA's scoring, it's going to be serious issues for Texas A&M in that game. A tough, tough spot for the Aggies. South Carolina and NC State. I'll tell you, man, I mean, I saw South Carolina in the spring. This team has grown a lot since the end of last year, since the loss to USF in that Birmingham Bowl. This is a pretty good team. Look, I mean, they still need guys. They still need players. They're on their way. Muschamp will get players there, okay? But when you have a quarterback, an elite quarterback like Jake Bentley, a guy that can do the unusual, and that's what I love about Muschamp when I asked him about Bentley. He can do the unusual. When you have a guy that can do that, when you have a guy who can make throws that other quarterbacks just simply can't make, it's amazing what it does for the rest of the team and the confidence it gives the rest of the team. You know, and Hayden talked about that. And Jake is this kid with this big personality, the baby-faced assassin. They love him there. They absolutely love him. And if you got a situation like that where the quarterback, the natural leader of your team, the guy everybody looks to, like it or not, he's the guy. The quarterback is the guy. If you've got a dynamic, charismatic kid, a guy who hates to lose, and Aiden again talked about that with the Xbox and Jake's passion to win. And I spoke with Jake Bentley this last spring for a profile. I'm going to work on him at Bleacher Report later this fall. Just an incredibly intense guy that cannot stand losing. You get that kind of attitude, that kind of aura at that most important position on the field, unique things can happen. You can get a team that should probably only win 5 or 6 games that might win 8 or 9. You can get a team that maybe is going to struggle to get bowl eligible to a team that in November actually has a chance to win a division title. I like South Carolina. I like where they're headed. They're getting 4.5 in that game. 4.5. I'd take the 4.5 all day long. It's going to be fun to see the impact of Matt Canada, the new offensive coordinator at LSU, and what he can do with Danny Etling. I think Danny Etling throws a nice deep ball. Matt Canada's had it clearly over the last 10, 15 years, a significant impact on some of the top quarterbacks in the game. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there at LSU, because the quarterback clearly has been the biggest problem of all at LSU. So we'll get a good idea of where LSU is headed at that spot. I think Kentucky and Vanderbilt are just in two really dicey games. Kentucky's got to go to Southern Miss. They lost to Southern Miss last year at home. Vandy's got to go to Middle Tennessee. That's another dicey little spot. Those are two games those two teams have to win if you're talking about do you qualify for a bowl. And I think more so for Kentucky. Kentucky's got to show, look, we've turned the corner now. We're no longer just hoping to get 3 or 4 non-conference games to bolster our push to get to bowl eligibility. Kentucky's got to get to the point where they're saying, yeah, it's Southern Miss. We're going to go there. We're going to win. End of story. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. The rest of the league teams, it's cupcake city. It just is what it is. That's going to wrap it up for First and Ten, the podcast. We'll see you next week. Remember, subscribe to the podcast, like the podcast, tell your friends about the podcast, and we'll have fun every week. Be good, everybody.